Well, Danny, I'm glad you turned your mic on because this segment's about you, sir.
What did I do?
Pretty much. We have segments to fill.
Yeah.
This segment's going to be about tennis.
We could if you want.
If Danny wants to talk tennis.
Yeah, I have played tennis. I actually played doubles in the eighth grade and one district with my partner, Michael Rao.
And that's why we're doing the segment. Yes. They had tennis in Knox City at the school?
Yeah. Yeah, it was we had track and field and tennis.
You know, we had a...
He didn't go to school in a barn.
No, it wasn't like Little House on the Prairie where I was in there with, you know, kindergartners and seniors.
And boar.
And a pig. Learning arithmetic.
No, with one school lady. One school mark.
We got tennis.
I didn't grow up in Deadwood.
That's kind of the way I've always imagined it.
I know, everybody does.
We didn't have tennis until... We got it right whenever I started high school, and we had like a little tennis center thing the city built next to our football like field house. And the bit was to during like the girls' tennis matches in the afternoon, their parents are there and everything, is to push somebody outside the field house nude.
Really?
So they're standing there because I feel like even in the last 11 years, that's maybe become less acceptable to be naked in front of
the opposite sex.
Yeah.
That's terrifying as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pushed out, and there's just tennis hots playing doubles, and I'm standing there 110 pounds.
Just donging it.
There's no time in my life when that thing could ever be described as what you just called it.
Donging it?
It's just not... that. When I hear that word, I'm thinking something more serious than what I'm possessing.
You're thinking LeVar Arrington?
Yeah. Okay.
Not your small caliber weapon?
No, I'm thimbling it.
Now, we had tennis, and I think a great part of it was my the history teacher, Mr. Verhollen, he was a big, big tennis proponent, and he was really good and played a lot, and he was our tennis coach. But the thing that was strange about him is he was right-handed, but on his right hand, he didn't have a thumb.
What?
Yes. He did not have a thumb.
You know what? In junior high...
And so he trained his index finger to be the opposable digit.
What a beating. Wow.
And was able to be a really good tennis player in spite of the fact of not having a thumb.
Can you imagine playing golf without a thumb?
No.
Military background?
I can't imagine making love without a thumb. I'm sorry, what?
I can't imagine making love to myself without one.
I know.
Right?
It'd be weird.
But I need both.
Yeah.
Know what I'm saying?
Yeah, bro. Was there a military background?
For him.
For him? I don't know. I think
a lot of those guys.
The guys that lose digits.
And then end up like in a random high school coaching teaching job.
We had a junior high football coach who was missing half a thumb.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he lost it. I don't think he was ever in the military. But he would be coaching up secondary, and he'd be throwing passes trying to get us to intercept, and he'd be like, dang, I don't know why I can't throw well today. And we're like, dude, you don't have half a thumb, you idiot.
We know why. So, in addition to junior high tennis, you played football in high school.
Yes, varsity lettered 4 years.
He and I talk about this a lot. The tenor in which your coaches would talk to you. Mine were really, really mean.
You got called a British cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But it was with itty on the end.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, like, raggedy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's like an adjective.
They were actually...
That raggedy tackling.
They worked our asses off. They were really hard, but they were fair. You know, it was a very Christian...
Yeah,
Bible town, so there wasn't a lot of, there weren't F-bombs, there wasn't cursing. Every once in a while you'd get a hell or a damn.
There was some weird dad cussing in there.
Yeah, and then every once in a while, like maybe they'd drop one S-bomb a year just for emphasis, but no, it wasn't like that at all.
See, I feel like I came from both a football background and a familial background where I think my grandfather would curse either right before, after, or even during a prayer.
During a prayer?
He would cuss to God?
Yes. Like, it would just slip. Like, it just didn't seem like it was a distinct... I always thought of them as religious, but they were a foul-mouthed folk.
Yeah.
And I feel like my football coaches were pretty religious, too, and they were still...
Thank you for these effing pork chops.
These GD pork chops. In a prayer.
So strange. But, weird. So, you moved up here right after high school.
Immediately.
Okay.
Yes.
Was that did anybody else at home do that?
to Dallas.
Was it looked at as
very
like Hollywood-y
rare.
Type?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. See, out there, everybody, if you went to the big college, you went to Texas Tech. That was essentially 13th grade. Was Texas Tech. Or you would go to West Texas State in Canyon, or you would go to Angelo State University, or Hardin-Simmons,
right.
Or McMurray in Wichita Falls. You know, there's several colleges in Abilene. That's where you would go. It was very unlikely that a kid from that town would go to Austin.
Yeah.
Would go to... Now, we did have one of the kids, one of my best friends, and an amazing point guard, Rick Wooperman.
What a great name.
Yeah. He went to UT, and he's now a surgeon. He was the smartest kid in school. Yeah. So we actually have a real live doctor from Knox City.
You go back, what, a couple times a year probably?
Yeah, twice a year. Yeah, to see my mother still lives there. That is the only reason.
You're probably the second most successful person from there then.
Next to Rick Wooperman?
Yeah, there's quite a gulf between one and two.
It's Rick Wooperman,
but still,
Danny, and Boar.
And a pig.
So are you actually really good at setting up tents, or was that just
a lofty claim? Look, I was in Boy Scouts for five, six years. I was too lazy to become an Eagle Scout because I just refused to do the big project. I didn't want to go paint a care home. Or come up with some giant art project to install at the city park.
A care home.
I just didn't want to do that, so I just kind of dropped out. It's like pretty much everything else in my life. I never finished.
Started pretty great, promised. Yeah. People are excited. Maybe there's some buzz around, who's this kid?
It would be started from the bottom, and we're halfway there.
And very happy.
Yeah,
me and top track. Now we're
started
content.
From the bottom, now we up.
Yes. So, yeah, really good at tent setup. And, you know, I've got recent experience because the band that I played in, you know, a few years back would go to Terlingua and play the chili cook-off down there.
Oh,
and
the King Bucks.
And you'd have to camp. And so you'd bring your own tent.
Do they still do that? Or they can't? Because I know they've done that for years and years and years. Is it still in
Terlingua? The chili cook-off?
Yeah,
it's every year. It's been going on since, I believe, 67.
Really?
I think it peaked in probably the 80s and 90s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, attendance, it's not as good as it's been, but it's not bad. But it's so much fun, and it's such a beautiful part of the country.
What's the coolest place you've ever played?
The coolest place I've ever played would probably have to be the Whiskey A Go Go in Hollywood. The same stage as the Doors.
And who was that sort of? With?
No, that was Sahara Rain.
Oh, my
God. This was in, like, 1989.
I had no idea that you guys at Sahara Rain developed that level of traction.
Yeah, we did a couple of showcase tours out there where we would go out there and set up and play gigs for labels and stuff. No bites. It was too late in the game.
And you might have shared this story in the past, but what happened there with Sahara Rain? Was it a matter of you got tired of the, I guess, the art or the songwriting and that whole hair metal scene, or did something happen that broke the group up?
You know, I think it was just, well, number one, I knocked up a girl and had a kid.
Okay.
You know, that changes lives, doesn't it, guys?
Sure does.
Hey, are you pregnant or just fat?
That's when he walked in.
So that was a big part of it. But honestly, stylistically, it wasn't going to last much longer because that, to me, I started feeling early on that music was tired and beaten and had been going on since like 1983. And here we are.
So like Guns N' Roses comes out around
87. It was about 87 that I started feeling like, you know what, this is not going to, like the stuff that we were doing, the more progressive, technical, yet poppy type stuff, there was no place for it to go, and I just quite honestly just found no desire to continue doing it.
Do you ever go back and listen to that and with a critical ear? You have to, right?
I listen to it and I hear some very, very adept technical players.
Yeah.
And very, very little taste because we were kids and it was a matter of putting everything into the batter, into the mix, and not leaving anything out.
It's so weird to me that there was a time
because I wasn't exposed to anything else.
Yeah,
if you grew up out there in that small town, you were exposed
to Slayer.
You had new wave, and then you had metal or country. And if nobody listened to New Wave, we had like one or two kids that were gay that listened to Culture Club and Duran Duran and stuff
and
like that.
Now you're on the orphanage with Davey.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
You come full circle.
Or you had the Ropers, you know.
Oh, the Ropers.
And they listened to Garth Brooks and George Strait and stuff like that. And then you had the guys that I hung out with, and you listened to Dokken and Rat.
And Fart Tapes.
And Fart Tapes.
Play the Fart Tape.
Yeah. So that's all I knew. But once I got to, got to college, I got exposed to REM and U2 and TSOL and stuff like that, and kind of broadened my horizons a bit. So I already at that point was kind of like, man, this can't be, there's more stuff out there.
Well, you were already feeling that way, but how awkward was it getting around other people that maybe had more advanced musical tastes, and you sort of stepped
into
that?
You're still wearing the F pants.
Yeah, you're still wearing your, Dokken t-shirt.
Well, I realized that even when the fashion would change within the band, that I would show up wearing, army shorts and Doc Martens, and the other guys who were still wearing rayon shirts unbuttoned to the belly button and acid wash jeans, and they would look at me and say, "You're really going to wear that tonight?" I'm like, "Yes. I'm going
to
go up there and play this ridiculous music wearing this outfit."
Do you still have any contact with them?
On occasion. Yeah, on occasion. Well, I mean, Trey Carmichael was in it for a few years, so I see him all the time.
Yeah.
But, on occasion, we stay in touch via text or email.
Are any of them still in West Texas?
They're all in Dallas.
Oh, they are?
All very, very successful dudes. They're much more successful than me and the other guy.
So you
put
came
together.
Here and then started Sahara Rain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Met two guys in college, and we dropped out after one semester and said, let's play music together.
Right. I feel like I wish on the heels of the bad radio 15 for 15 on Rocco on the Rant the other day, I feel like, especially after hearing about the Kinsler Mike story the other day, which I hadn't thought about in years, I feel like there's so many old hardline tales that I wish we could get into.
I think there should be so many. There should be a 15 to 15 on
Don Wakamatsu.
That's a great one.
Also, thank you. The
Country
Danny,
Cream.
The Greg O'Danny prank.
Oh, my God. The Whataburger prank.
Yeah. Oh, God.
That's short story.
That's a great one.
That's
short
the
story.
Best prank there is. Yeah, real quick on
the
that.
The Whataburger prank?
Yeah.
All right.
What does Ryan's call that? Someday, Danny,
you'll understand. And this was...
Like, I bet you Mino's never even heard this.
What year was it?
Oh, probably 2000. It was
I've heard of it, but
I wasn't here live.
I was on the hard line. I just started with them maybe 6 to 8 months, and they were on a trip.
Camp.
I believe to Cowboys training camp in Oxnard. I was like calling in to check on stuff, and then it happened so organically, and I'd be on the phone with Corby, and he would say something like, Mike never showed up, or he missed his flight, and they just were like just throwing bad information at me just to get me worried back here that something was dreadfully wrong. And then they just kept running with it to the point where they had me believing that Mike was not going to training camp, that something had gone dreadfully wrong, but then at the last minute on Sunday, he had changed his mind and had driven to the airport but didn't have any money and was hungry. So I am at home on Sunday, my one day off, hanging out with my wife at the time, and our one day to spend together, and I get this phone call from Mike, and he's like, "Yeah, man, I'm at DFW, and I'm about to get on a plane in a couple hours, and man, I left my wallet, and I'm having to use my passport, and I'm starving. Is there any way that maybe you could, come out here and bring me like, I don't know, like $20 and a Whataburger,
a bag of Whataburgers?" And didn't some P1 take a picture of you in the airport with that bag of Whataburgers?
Crap, the Stanford blowhard, I believe.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Joe Michael.
Okay.
So I'm like, yes. I'm young and working for the hardline, man. I'll do anything for
Radio
you guys.
Hall of Famer.
This is like a year after Cat left, right?
Yeah. And I guess I had convinced myself that him and his wife had split and she had kicked him out of the house or something like that. Just something really bad had happened. Sure, so I'll be damned if I don't roll out to 183 and run by that Whataburger on Story Road and grab him a nice Whataburger with fries, drive it to the airport. He's on the phone. I'm on the phone, and we're trying to connect, and I'm walking. This is when you could actually access the terminal without clearing any security.
Yes.
Pre-9/11.
And I'm walking around DFW Terminal C with a bag of Whataburger in shorts, just looking for Mike.
Yeah.
And then finally, he says that And I went by the ATM to get him $20 so he would have money. And I can't remember exactly how it ended, but it ended with somebody being there, Joe Michael being there, taking candid shots of me walking through the airport with Whataburger in tow, and then Mike somehow just saying, you know what, just forget it. I changed my mind. I'm going home. I can't go to camp. I just can't go. And I was like, okay, man, you know, hey, I'm sorry. He's like, I'm really sorry, but I'm not going to camp. I'm going home. I've got to deal with something. So I drive back to my house on 183, and I look over in the bag, and I'm like, the hell with it. And I just whip out the Whataburger and just devour it all the way.
This is a happy ending.
Yeah. But so anyway, we go on the air the next day, and I'm talking to Mike and or Corby and Grego down line. I'm like, yeah, I can't believe this happened with Mike. You know, he never made it. And I went to bring him a Whataburger, and he changed his mind and went home. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the opening segment, you hear the Hardline theme, and I'm waiting for the Hammers, Uncomfortable Formatics, to take over the show.
All right. Hardline at camp, brother.
And then here comes Mike. 3:29. And I'm like, whoa. I go, so I'm thinking, oh, he's upstairs at the Cliff Studio doing the show from here. And then once I realize that this has all been a prank, that he's actually in Oxnard,
there's just such little on-air payoff.
Like, there's really not. It was just misery.
Audio recorded.
No, there was audio. They recorded me the whole time.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, and I was like, Mike, you've got to tell me what's going on. And that's where, someday, Danny, you'll understand. That was his excuse, and that was good enough for me.
And then I guess life sort of imitated the prank a few years later, didn't it?
Yeah, when he wandered off and missed his flight. Wandered off. That only applies to men who are elderly.
Yeah.
I was thinking of his other co-host, personally.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking of divorce.
Oh.
A trifecta.
Boy, if you will. Well, thanks for having me.
It's five. Oh,
you can
man,
go.
Late.
You're correct. Right.
Yeah, we're good.
See you guys. This show sucks today.
I know.
Soccer, I guess. Next.